and welcome to Educators to Educators. I'm Carrie Conover, and thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to be discussing flexible learning environments. And I'm so excited to have a very special guest with us, Ms. Good, today. Ms. Good is a first grade teacher at Madison Elementary School. And the reason that Ms. Good is so special to me is she actually taught my daughter, Emily, in kindergarten last year. And so this year I was bringing Emily to school for the meet and treat, meet your teacher. She was going into first grade. And I happened to walk by Miss Good's classroom and noticed that it said that she was teaching first grade this year, that she was looping up to first grade. So I popped my head in her classroom and I couldn't believe the difference. Her classroom looked a lot different than it did last year. We're gonna take some time today to learn about this new adventure Miss Good went on this year. We're gonna highlight these three things. The first thing Ms. Good is gonna highlight is the research and how she thought through this change in her classroom to determine if it was right for her. The second item we're gonna talk about is how does her day start and what does this actually look like in her classroom? And finally, we're gonna wrap up talking to Ms. Good about where she's gonna go from here and how she's gonna make her classroom even more engaging in the year to come. Before we get started with Ms. Good today, I just wanted to take a second to pause and think about where we've gone so far on Educators to Educators. If you're listening to this podcast, you know this is our fifth episode. And in the first episode, I really told you about the why I'm doing this podcast. And many of you know I taught third, fourth, and fifth grade for 10 years in Chicago Public Schools. An incredible experience. And then I've been spending the last 4 years traveling the nation, working in a startup company and then in a larger education company, doing everything from setting up devices to helping tech directors get things set up in their schools and school districts, to implementation plans, to professional development, to working with superintendents. I've really seen the whole gamut of school districts and it's been quite amazing. But I decided there was something bigger I wanted to do in my life. And I began this podcast, Educators to Educators, as really an outlet of all of this knowledge, a place to share this knowledge and talk to other educators. And to my surprise, my initial goal for this podcast was, okay, I'd love to have 1,000 subscribers by 6 months. And to my shock, we hit over 1,000 subscribers in the first 19 days of Educators to Educators. And when I started to think about it, I thought, wow, like there's something here about the success of this podcast. I had a mentor of mine ask me, why are you doing this podcast? What are you getting out of it? And what's the point? What's your mission behind this podcast? And so I've been thinking about it a lot. And I think that teaching can be a really isolating profession. It can be an amazing profession, but it's also teachers. We, as much as we collaborate, when we shut that classroom door, it's us and those 20, 25, 30, 32 students every day. And sometimes it can feel a bit isolating. I love teachers. They're super motivated. They want what's best for their students. I look on Instagram and Facebook and Pinterest, and I see these amazing classrooms that teachers are putting together for their students. And I decided the mission of this podcast is I have an opportunity with this podcast to shine a spotlight on amazing teaching and learning happening across this nation. And that, my friends, is why I'm doing Educators to Educators. I want to take that spotlight it and shine it on amazing teaching and learning and amazing educators, educational leaders across this nation. So I'm going to challenge all of you to nominate either yourself or an educator you know that's doing incredible work in their classroom to be the next guest on Educators to Educators. I know some of you may be shy. Don't let that get in your way. Most of my guests are on the shy side. But once they got going, they realized, hey, I am doing incredible work in my classroom, and I want to be able to share that out on E2E. So if you could do me a favor, two favors. One, share this with fellow teachers. Help me make this podcast even stronger so I can keep shining that spotlight on amazing educators in this nation. And two, go to Instagram. I have a new Instagram account. It is educators2educators, so make sure you use the number 2, educators2educators. Find me on Instagram. Go to the Shine the Spotlight post that I put on and nominate an amazing educator or yourself to be the next guest on Educators to Educators. Ms. Good, thank you so much for joining us on E2E today. I'm so excited to have you. And before we get started, I would love for you to tell myself and the audience a little bit about your teaching background.
I graduated from Drake, which is in Iowa. I have my reading endorsement from there as well. I've been teaching for 3 years. I've done kindergarten for 3 years, 2 years at a private school, and then 1 year in a public school. And then this year will be my fourth year and my first year in first grade. I have always wanted to be a teacher. Teaching has been something I've always wanted to do since I was little. I think a lot of it just has to do with that I had great teachers growing up. And I think that a lot of them made me see how fun it is to be a teacher and how fun it is to be in school. And I always was that kid who would take their dolls and they would be read to, or I would pretend to be their teacher and they would sit in chairs or on the floor and I would teach them addition or subtraction or spelling. So it was always just something I've always wanted to do ever since I was little. Great. I also am getting my master's in technology, so I'll be done with that in December. So I've been trying to do a lot of technology that kind of in my classroom that goes with a lot of the flexible learning space, which allows for a lot more of that collaboration.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. We're so excited to have you here today. And let's get started talking about flexible learning spaces. So, Ms. Good, one thing I really loved about what we were talking about when we were planning for today's podcast is how much research and reading you did before you took this leap. A lot of times as teachers, we make really quick decisions all the time to change things in our classroom, modify, maybe even on the spot. But a decision like this, this really changes your learning environment. And I loved how you were talking about all the research you did. So can you share out with us about that research and how you made the decision to make this shift?
So I had to look through a lot of blogs. A lot of them were other teachers who already do flexible seating. And it was a lot of just their insights of things that they kind of learned. And it made me realize that I needed to think everything through before I decided if it was right for my classroom. I had to decide, do I have this space? Do I have organizational materials available to make this possible? And all these things I had to think of before I even started buying any of the flexible seating options, because I wanted to make sure that it would work for my classroom.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure that it would benefit my students at the same time. So a lot of the research was kind of going back to making sure you're organized, making sure you have a plan, making sure you're taking the time to work on the behavioral issues that might arise with the open and flexibility that you get with this concept. And I think a lot of it was really just thinking it all through and really figuring out what needed to be done before I even thought about putting it in my classroom.
Putting it, you know, rolling out the plan.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting too, because, you know, I think it's easy to get excited about things that are happening in education that, okay, well, I know flexible seating is the thing to do, so I'm just going to jump in and do it. And I like that you really thought through all those things before you made that change. And it almost sounds like you can really do this in phases, year by year, slowly roll it out if you need to, or go for the whole shebang in year one. I think it's interesting that you brought up supplies, because I think there's two parts to this, right? Actually, three. There's the physical classroom that you have to get all of the stuff to make this happen and kind of get rid of that traditional furniture, per se. Then you're talking a little bit about the behavior management, classroom management, right? This just like blows up classroom management plans if you don't have a good plan in place. And then there's like the actual instruction. So can we talk a little bit about the research that you did around the stuff? So what did you learn when you're reading these blogs? How are teachers setting up these flexible learning spaces when we don't all have these magic teacher checking accounts that we can just go out and go on shopping sprees?
Yeah, so a lot of it was, I read a lot of different blogs and almost every single one did something different. So I really had to think what would work for my classroom and what would work for the price range that I was willing to go to make this possible, because it was all of my own money. But it was something I wanted to do. So it was, for me, it felt that it was like worth it and like I was willing to do it. So some were saying that they would do like the three crates and they would just like pull them out, the three drawers that you pull out, and each kid would have their own drawer and they'd put all their supplies in there.
Oh, so like those stacking drawers that you could buy at Target.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And a lot of that for me,
that's just expensive. Those are a lot of money.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So that was not really an option for me, especially with I only have 20 kids this year, which is awesome. Yeah. But if I had a class of 25 or 30, like, that's a lot to buy.
Yes.
And it's a lot. They're big and they take up a lot of space. So that didn't really seem to work for me. The other thing I read was like the Rainbow 10 drawer carts. And that's actually what I ended up going with.
Yeah. And we'll put some pictures of your classroom. So when Miss Good talks about different things she uses in her classroom, I'll make sure to put pictures up on my website and on Facebook so that you all can see what we're talking about.
Absolutely. So I have the drawers, and so that way they're easier and they were cheaper off Amazon, which is great. And for that, like, that's what the kids use. That's where their folders go. That's where their journals go. That's where any like unfinished work goes, everything. But then I also do have a separate organizational spot for like pencils and crayons and scissors and all of that. So I had to kind of pick two different places. And that was one thing that was in a blog that someone said, is that they had like the drawers and then they had the pencil cases for each individual kid.
Okay.
But then other ones was like they had the drawers, but then they had caddies at each of the different flexible seating choices. And then the kids, whenever they were at that flexible seating choice, that's where they got their community supplies, was through that caddy.
So most teachers these days really do have, for the most part, community supplies. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. I'm looking at your drawer system. Instead of the kids' folders and things maybe hanging on the back of their chairs, or if you have desks in your classroom, instead of all that stuff being in desks, which, my gosh, can get quite messy, she just has drawers, 10, you know, three drawers, sets of drawers in which students' personal belongings can go. So Miss Good, I'm looking around your classroom and seeing lots of incredible seating and learning spaces. So can you talk about how you came up with these spaces in your classroom?
So a lot of it was based off of blogs or the things that I use to add into my classroom. So the first one I have is crates that I got from Target or Walmart. And I just zip tied them together with a foam piece on top. And then it's just turned into a bench for the students to use. The other thing I have are crates, which again were from Target and Walmart. And then I also have seat cushions on top, like cushions that you have on your outdoor patio. And that I have five of those in my classroom, which allows kids to still be like in a seating type situation, but it's still, there's no back, and it allows for some flexibility with the table.
And you could also move those around if kids wanted to. Would they be allowed to move those in a corner, maybe if they wanted some quiet time or to be kind of in a space on their own, or do they need to be at that table with them?
Nope, they can be at the table or moved away with the clipboard or something if that's what they need. The other choice I have are little scoopers. The scoopers are great for them, and those you can get from Walmart, and there's also like off of Wayfair too. They have deals there, and you get like a pack of six of them, and the students can just sit in them, and they can kind of rock back and forth, which is nice. It allows them the chance to be seated, but to still be able to move. Which,
those are called scoopers?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm Googling that right when we're done, and I'll send some pictures on my website. Scoopers, okay, what else do you have?
And then we also have lap trays, which at Joann's at the beginning of the year had a big deal on them. So they're just the lap trays where students sit on the floor, and the lap tray just goes over, of course, their lap, and then they have a little hard surface to work on. So it's kind of like a table, but at their level for sitting.
Love it, yep.
The last thing I have are stools. So these are just like the regular stools. I had to move my table up just a little bit because the stools are a little high. So I had to make sure that the stools were still allowing the kids to not feel hunched over. So that was a big piece. I had to make sure that they're still kind of working on their posture, even if they're sitting in stools.
Yeah.
So then I have stools, and then I have two traditional tables because, again, I think it's important for kids to be able to sit there if that's where they're more comfortable to work at. Or if, as the day goes on, if students decide that they don't want to be at their flexible seating choice anymore, then they can go to a table as an alternative.
Yeah, and I think it's just so natural the way that we work, especially office spaces this day, as I've traveled and worked with other ed tech companies and been in tech companies. I mean, it's not your traditional cubes and offices like it used to be, right? Like, that's more the real world. And I love that the students have the choice. Maybe they pick that they want to sit on the bench, but they're like, okay, I am having a hard time focusing. I need to be in like a more traditional space. So I love that you have that choice for them. It's really fun to be in here, and it makes me want to be seven again and be in first grade. This is pretty amazing. So now we're gonna transition and talk about your daily routine. I really wanna hear, you know, I always joke as teachers, I was like this. Teachers, we tend to be a little controlling of things. We like things to be in place. We wanna have a plan. A lot of times it's just having good classroom management. I know a lot of teachers that maybe want to make this leap are worried about, like, how do you start your day off right to make sure that everyone's here, it's a safe learning environment, and you're ready, the students are ready to learn.
Yeah, so when students come in, a lot of the things that were in the blogs were saying how it was important to make students show you that they're here before they pick a spot. And a lot of them had two different reasons for this. The first was so that students show you that they're here, and it's a great way just as an attendance purpose. It makes it a little easier classroom management-wise. And then also it held them accountable to get everything that they needed before they found a spot.
Love it.
So when the kids walk in, they have to check in, and it's usually on the smart board. So the kids find their name and move it up to show that they're at school and not at home anymore. Once they have done that, they have to get all of their materials. So they need to get their drawer, they need to get their pencils, then they can find a spot.
So they take this drawer with them to their spot?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize that. That's so cool. So they get their drawer. So then that also probably helps you. Like, they move it on the smart board. But then, like, if Johnny accidentally, like, moves Mohammed's, you know, smart board piece, you can also see, okay, Mary's drawer is still there. She's absent today?
Yeah.
That's so cool. I love it. Okay, sorry. I get excited about the smallest thing.
So it's made attendance a lot easier, obviously.
Yeah.
So once students have found their spots, we first started by making that every kid had to try every spot first. Mm. And that was something that was in a lot of the blogs, too, is that kids need to test every option before they make the decision on their own.
Yes.
And that was also a good way that goes into kind of the behavioral piece. Yeah. That goes into that they had to learn the rules for each flexible seating spot.
Love it. So how did you introduce, like, for instance, did you at the beginning of the year do like a fishbowl where you put students at that spot and other kids learned the expectations? How did you introduce that?
So a lot of the blogs, again, kind of went off of how it was important to obviously show what they're doing. So it was a lot of modeling and a lot of kid modeling as well. So I would model as a teacher. I would show them appropriate and inappropriate ways for each of the different flexible seating options. And then after that, kids would show me the appropriate and inappropriate. And we weren't using it as a way to call out kids who were doing it inappropriately. We were using it as a learning experience of why that was inappropriate or why that would be dangerous or not safe to be using the flexible seatings for those ways.
Right. And it's interesting, too. I think about classroom management. And a lot of our biggest fear as teachers is that we're wasting time. We've talked about this in a couple of my other podcasts with teachers. Like, as teachers, we have this fear about wasting time, right? Like, are the kids on task? Are they learning? Are they missing? All these time management things, right? So I think why, as teachers, we like to stick to that traditional seating of rows or groups in their seats is like, okay, I can look around, scan the room, and say, okay, everyone's on task. Everyone's learning. But the truth of the matter is, kids can fake that they're listening to you, whether they're in rows or they're in flexible spaces, right? So talk to me a little bit about, and I know, you know, we'll talk about this, but you probably work in small groups or pool kids. How are you monitoring engagement within your classroom?
I don't really need to monitor it because you can just tell. Like, I mean, you can look at them in these different flexible seating choices and they're engaged. Their heads are down, they are writing, they're talking or collaborating with their friends next to them. They're talking about how, oh my gosh, I wrote about summer and you wrote about summer. Let's talk about if ours are the same or different. And it just becomes natural because the kids are so close to each other and they want to talk to each other and they're seated next to each other that it allows for like a natural collaboration to kind of occur in the classroom. And it allows just for the kids to really feel that they can talk to the person next to them. And I can tell that they're working because there's not really much behavioral issues happening. I mean, they're sitting there, they're working, they're cutting, they're gluing, they're writing, they're reading, whatever they're doing it. And you can tell because, you know, Sally's sitting there rocking back and forth in the scooper, but her eyes are on the book and she's flipping through it. And when she's done, she's putting it back in her book box and getting another book right away. And Johnny's sitting at the benches and he's writing, his head's down, he's writing, he's looking at the wall for a word and then he's going back to writing. I mean, there's just the obvious like signs of engagement that are happening that you don't always notice because again, like you said, like they can kind of be faking it if they're at a table and you don't really know because they're all sitting there with their heads down working or they're all sitting there looking at the word wall and looking back. And so you don't really know how engaged or how well they're doing. But with this, it's pretty clear. I mean, if you came in and saw it, like you can tell those who are engaged.
It's interesting. I've been able to volunteer at the school more. So this year I've been in the hallway, and your classroom's close to the office. So a lot of times I'll walk by, and being an educator and having such an admiration for teachers, I'm always kind of peeking through to see what's going on. And I think there's been a few times that I've walked by and I see you at the carpet with the kids doing direct instruction with them, I'm assuming. I'm not, you know, standing there stalking you outside the door, but looks like you're doing some direct instruction using your smart board. So tell me a little bit, do you do these community kind of groups? You do your direct instructions, your mini lessons, set expectations, and then do students go to a different learning space? Do they go to the same learning space? How does that work?
So the learning spaces go with our daily five. So benches are used mostly for read to self or read to someone. The scoopers are used more for word work. Same with the lap trays. The crates and are kind of used more when it comes to the iPad time or technology or Chromebooks, whatever it might be. And the stools are usually used during guided reading or guided math time. So the flexible seating options are kind of there, but they have a natural space that kind of fits whatever subject area we're working on.
Okay. So if there's independent work that's going to go on, then can they choose where they go, or they go to a different spot, or do they have that spot they pick in the morning? Is that their spot for the whole day?
So the spot that they pick in the morning is their spot for the whole day. So okay. Any individual work, they always go back to kind of like their home space. Their home space is where they have their box, and that's where everything stays. And whenever it's individual work time, that's where they go. And then when it's math or reading, that's when they kind of get to use the other flexible seating nice. Choices, but are still having their home space during the day.
Let's take a little break here to tell you how to get a hold of me. You can visit me at my website at conoverinnovativeconsulting.com. That's C-O-N-O-V-E-R, conoverinnovativeconsulting.com. And there you can find links to all the blogs Miss Good used for her research over the summer to get ready for flexible seating. And you can also see pictures and videos and also articles that I have written in the past. So go ahead and visit me there or on my Facebook page, Conover Innovative Consulting. Of course, my new Instagram account, Educators to Educators. Also, many of you hear my slogan that I use at the end of this podcast, keep on teaching on. I've had a request to put that on a t-shirt and put it on my website. So I'm looking forward to getting there, those t-shirts up there for all of you to see. And let's get back to Miss Good to wrap up this podcast. I would love to hear, you know, how are you going to improve upon this? This is your first year. We're a couple months into school. What are maybe the couple of things you're super proud of and love and you're going to always keep? And what do you want to, how do you want to push yourself and stretch yourself in second semester and leading into next year?
So I really love that I took the time at the beginning of the year to really make sure that students knew what they had to do and what was expected of them at each spot. And that was really big, and that was monumental almost in making this successful. Because students had the idea of, they knew if this wasn't working for me, I wouldn't be able to be there anymore. And for them, it was like that self-motivator that I need to do this because I like this spot. And so I want to do my best work. I want to stay engaged. But it also, I would say the best part is the collaboration that kind of just naturally happens. I think that that's important for kids to have to do. And I think that it really helps because kids are there, they're right next to each other, they're allowed to do it because of the way they're seated,
seated. You're giving them trust, Miss Good. You're saying, like, here are my expectations, but I want you to be in an engaged, comfortable environment. I know you mentioned earlier, they're not little robots or little soldiers. Like, we have to stop treating kids like they're little soldiers that, like, you know, march in this little line. Like, there's a fine line between a really well-run and managed classroom and creating little soldiers, right? And I think what you have really pointed out to me is, by letting them be comfortable and have this choice, you're trusting them and you're saying, I trust you to be engaged.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think what to work on really is to allow more choice. Right now they get to pick a spot in the morning and that's their spot for the day. Unless they don't want to be there, then they can go to a traditional spot. But other than that, like, that's their spot for the day. It'd be nice to kind of try, which a lot of the blogs had also made these comments too, that kids can change in the morning and the afternoon. Kids could change for each subject area. Kids could change whenever they felt that it was necessary. But I think when you're starting off small, you only have so many flexible seating choices.
Yes.
So you can't really always jump into some of those big ideas. But I think that now that we've done it, I think like maybe even second semester, it would be really interesting to see that kids could choose in the morning and then they could choose something different in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And it'd be interesting to see if kids do move or don't move. And I think it'd be almost kind of like a cool science experiment in a way.
Yeah.
I think it would be cool to see, you know, there are some kids who do gravitate towards the same spot every day. And then there are some kids who, the beginning of the week, they kind of pick this spot. The middle of the end of the week, they kind of pick this other spot.
Interesting.
So it's been interesting to see how kids choose their spots and how it changes daily or weekly. But it would be interesting to see how they do it in a day. Would they pick the same spot in the morning as the afternoon?
Yeah.
Would they pick two different spots? And does their learning change during that time? Do you notice that they are more productive in the morning at that spot and they're more productive in the afternoon in this spot? Or do you notice that maybe that's not the case? You know, so it'd be really interesting to kind of see how it would progress. So that's my next step in trying.
Yeah. And as you were talking, I mean, I think as if you're listening to this and it's mid-year and you do have a traditional setup in your classroom, I mean, one of the things that I think is the biggest hurdle for this is getting that traditional school equipment. I saw that in a blog and I love that term. Like, how do you get it out of your classroom? I taught in an old building and there was nowhere for these big clunky desks to go. So I just modified things and moved them around. But maybe just start small. Like if you're nervous about, oh, you know, maybe I'm a second year teacher and I don't want to give up the control, make one flexible space. And on Monday, 5 of your kids are allowed to go use it. And on Tuesday, the other 5. Like, start somewhere. And that's a perfect segue into how I really want to wrap up today is to talk about teachers spend so much of their own money. So think about where you could get resources to help you move that traditional equipment out of your room or off to the side and put other equipment in. So one interesting thing is if you live near a college, put the word out, go out on the streets at the end of the school year when college students are moving out and they're trying to get rid of, you know, crates or, you know, all different kinds of like tables. Grab them, nab them, look on the side of the street, get your friend who has a pickup truck, drive around town, your college campus and look for things that you could pick up from college students. Another thing they said is go to Goodwill and the Salvation Army and say, hey, I'm a teacher, could you give me even a better price on this, right? Go there, talk to the manager, ask them for a deal, or just you can pay things that are pretty cheap. Put an email out to parents and send an email out or a note home saying, hey, here are the type of things I'm looking for. Before you get rid of stuff, think, could I use it? So tell your parents you're looking for these things. Of course, you have Donors Choose, Class Wish, GoFundMe. Go on Facebook and tell people. You just never know. A long-lost college friend might be looking to make a donation to a classroom and want to buy beanbags for your space. So be creative. Think about how you can start small and build from there. So Ms. Good, I just have such admiration for you. I'm excited to get on video and take some video of your classroom. We'll put that up on my website. But thank you so much for sharing out your flexible learning adventure with us.
Yes, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thank you so much for joining us for the 5th episode of Educators to Educators. And a special thank you for Ms. Good for joining us today. We'll see you next time, but until then, keep on teaching on.